So what they would do is they would kidnap wild birds and take them from the Pacific Northwest to New Jersey and release them and see if they could find their way home. The night before last, I finished a pretty interesting book called The Genius of Birds by Jennifer Ackerman. It's like every book that is about or purports to be about non-human intelligence, it was both delightful and frustrating. And the delightful part is I am always delighted when I hear every time I learn something new about the natural world, I fall in love again. And every time I learn something new about the natural world, I am again humbled and I am delighted and filled with awe. And this is true whether we're talking about the intelligence of bacteria, the intelligence of plants, the intelligence of birds. And even the mythical intelligence of humans. And the reason I'm frustrated with these books often has to do with what I've said and written many times, which is that pretty much every book that purports to show that non-humans can think or communicate still holds humans up as a standard by which everyone else must be judged and still reinforces human supremacy through asking the question, can they or can't they think? As opposed to asking the question, can we or can we not hear? Can we or can we not perceive their intelligence? There's always this presumption that that the only ways they show intelligence quite often are ways that we have been able to perceive and measure. So again, I found the book just delightful with its descriptions of the ways that, like there were extended descriptions of the maps, the internal maps that birds form in order to be able to migrate or in order to be able to cache and then later find their food. Some types of seed hiders will have like thousands and thousands of food caches, and they know where they all are over a several square mile area. And honestly, if I don't put my keys in the same place every time, I don't know where they are. And not only that, but the birds will, they're putting this food into storage places, and they're also paying attention to whether they have stored seeds, which will last a long time, or fruits, which will last less, or insects, which will last even less. And they will then know which food they have to eat first so it doesn't spoil. And at the same time they're hiding this food, they're also remembering where they pretended to hide food because other birds were trying to steal it from them. And this extraordinary memory. Or I knew before this that hummingbirds, especially, I don't know about in places that aren't cold, but in places that are cold at all, hummingbirds have such a high metabolism that they actually go into hibernation every night. Their metabolism is so fast that if they just slept like a normal being, they would die of starvation. And so that I knew before, but what I didn't know is what that means is they have to have an extraordinary memory because they're using so much energy to fly that they can't waste energy flying to a flower that they already flew to. And they have to know where all the flowers in their range are, what times they produce nectar, and whether they already visited it that day. And again, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have suddenly found myself standing in the middle of the living room with a can opener in one hand and an empty plastic bag in the other, wondering why the hell I'm standing here. They don't have the luxury of being that forgetful. And So there's all sorts of just wonderful stories, or how they migrate. They will have internal maps, how birds, they will have maps of part of how they migrate is through smell. Part of how they migrate is through, attending to magnetic fields. Part of how they migrate is through attending to stars, and that they have to make these huge maps that can, in essence, cover much of the world. And it's absolutely extraordinary. So there's all those stories. And of course, we all know about the corvids being able to solve problems. And so there's this, I love those parts of the book. So that was all great, but a problem I have with pretty much every book that is like this is there are some unquestioned human supremacist assumptions that filter in to so much of the text. And in this one, for example, there was a place, and again, this author is perfectly fine. I'm not complaining about this author. These are just assumptions held by this culture that this particular book, just like any other book on this subject, would help us make an entree into seeing these unquestioned assumptions that are the real authorities of the culture. And one of them is there was a place in there where she's talking about how birds use stars to navigate. And then she said, but that can't be a sign of intelligence because dung beetles also use stars to navigate. It's like, so no, the assumption is that if a dung beetle can do it, it doesn't take any intelligence. Why don't you instead presume that maybe that means that dung beetles have that as a form of intelligence? But there's this immediate presumption that dung beetles are stupid and or not intelligent, even though she acknowledges that bees are intelligent in ways that are beyond, that make clear they could not do it with, if our models and if our beliefs that intelligence is strictly based on the number of neurons, bees outperform their neurons. So she acknowledges that, but when it comes to dung beetles, it's just, oh, easy to just presume that dung beetles are stupid. She also presumes and she says the reptiles are stupid as opposed to birds who are smart, or which she would say birds that are smart, because all through the book, this goes with the standard convention that non-humans are that's and not who, and not who's. So that was one problem. And then, it's always, as I said earlier, there's this, if you're writing a book that purports to show that non-humans can think, that's really the equivalent. Let's put this in terms of, say you're writing a book that purports to show that Jews really aren't subhuman, or that blondes really aren't stupid. Then if you're writing that, you're still presuming that white people, white males, are the standard by which others are to be judged. And the same thing happens with our studies of non-humans, that they are presumed to be intelligent to the degree that they can match our intelligence, or that they can match a form of our intelligence. In fact, late in the book, she says something about, you know, it's only natural that we value the forms of intelligence that are our own. And I would change one word in that sentence and say it's only cultural that we value those types of intelligence that match our own. This is what this culture has done to every other culture, that if there's a form of intelligence that matches our own, well, gosh, they may just be kind of honorary special. But if they have forms of intelligence that are not our own, they're not valued. And I don't know about anybody else, but that's not how I am in my own life. In my own life, just among humans, I have some forms of intelligence that are, that I can be pretty smart. And there are some forms of intelligence that I don't have. I am spatially incompetent. I can't, if you give me a box and things to put in this box, shapes to put in this box, I could probably fit in about half as many as you, no matter who you are. And I could do great on a standardized test, you know, like we had in high school and college. I could smoke those. So it seems like I'm very intelligent. But if the test instead were to put all of these shapes into a box, I would be held back in school. And meanwhile, you know, my mom has great intelligence that way, and she could, most people could put in twice as much as I could. She could put in three times as much. I value that as a form of intelligence. I don't devalue it. I don't diss it because I don't have it. So I don't think it's natural to say that, that we primarily value the forms of intelligence we have. But anyway, I would get to some other problems in the book. One of them is that she also fully accepts the mechanistic perspective that has infected this entire culture. So she will, and she, once again, she's not alone in doing this. This is done constantly, that she will take some behavior of a non-human, and then she will try to give some explanation for why this works with a mechanistic perspective. And whenever you do this, you just have to torture logic in order to make it work. And one example of this is, you know, we always hear that songbirds are monogamous. And that was not true at all. And they are socially monogamous, but about 20% of the eggs in any clutch are probably have a different father. And so she starts talking about how this, from a mechanistic perspective, could be that this will help for males to fight over territory a little bit less, because now they're raising the neighbor's kids might be theirs too. And I'm reading about this and I'm thinking, maybe some songbirds just like to screw around. You know, it's like, what mechanistic perspective does is remove all idiosyncrasy and remove all personality from the explanation. And yes, I fully understand, you know, I see bears here a lot, all the time. And she discussed this in the book about how, so here's another problem with judging intelligence. It was a story of these two types of very closely related birds. I don't remember the exact types, but they're very closely related. One of them is very shy and the other one is much more, willing to go, much more brash. And in intelligence tests, when they would put the birds in cages, we'll get to that in a second, when they would put the birds in cages and then do tests on them, the shy birds would fail the intelligence tests basically because they're hiding back in the corner, and the brash birds would figure out the test pretty quickly and be able to get them access to the mealworm. And in the discussion, she did bow to this, but in the discussion generally, there was this notion that somehow the birds who are more brash, because they figure out the test more quickly, they are more intelligent. But that doesn't really work, because the others are simply shyer and probably much more freaked out by being in the cage. And I understand, now we're back to mechanism, that I understand that there are mechanistic reasons to have, can be mechanistic reasons to have some creatures be more aggressive and some not, even within the same species. So for example, when there are bears here who have twins, quite often one twin is very aggressive and one is very shy. And it occurred to me a long time ago that this was actually a pretty good reproductive strategy in a mechanistic sense, because the more aggressive or brash bear gets more food. Every time there's food, that bear is all over it. And the other bear doesn't get as much food. But on the other hand, what this means is if there is a chance for one bear to get killed in an accident, it's going to be the brash bear. And so you want to have that variation. So I understand that. But so I'm not saying you can't have any mechanistic explanation for anything. I'm saying that when you presume that life is all mechanistic, then you have to torture everything to pretend there's no personality and there's no idiosyncrasy. I've had a vasectomy. Does this mean that every action I do is a fucking waste of time? Does this mean that there is no point to my life whatsoever? Or what is the reproductive strategy behind playing football? I mean, they could argue that this shows that the men are big and strong and therefore would be capable of carrying a water buffalo and therefore they're a good mate, and so all the women will throw themselves at them. But that doesn't explain why groupies would throw themselves at rock stars. What's the competitive advantage of being a rock star? What's the competitive advantage of being Iggy Pop? So, and we can do this with all the things we do. What's the competitive advantage of being really good at computer games? You know, maybe some people just like to play computer games. Oh no, I can understand a reproductive strategy. If somebody plays a lot of computer games, what that means is they're removing themselves from the gene pool by simply being in their parents' basement all the time, as opposed to actually, and no, this was a joke, so do not send me hate mail. This was a joke. I don't mean it. Don't send me hate mail from the desktop in your parents' basement. But my point with all this is that when it comes to humans, we can allow that sometimes we do things because they're fun. What advantage is it for me to have a cat? What sexually reproductive advantage does that make for a guy with a vasectomy to have a cat? Like, that doesn't work in this mechanistic scheme. For sure, having a cat, petting a cat can produce endorphins, it can make me happier, but from a mechanistic perspective, we don't care if I'm happy. All we care about is that I pass on my genes. So my point is that this was in the book too, and it's in all these books. This why can't, and it's also very human supremacist, because why can't we just have turtles doing things because they like them? Why can't we have plants doing things because they like them? Why can't we have animals doing things because they like them and because they're fun, as opposed to because they have some sort of reproductive – not all of life is based on this mechanistic perspective. So that was another problem that I have with all these books. And then the biggest problem I had is that the way they have discovered what they have about how birds migrate – is through doing experiments. And there were a lot of animal experiments in this book. I just have to say, by the way, that I have the same problem with plant experiments too, because plants are every bit as sentient and every bit as beingness as these. But so what they would do is they would kidnap wild birds and take them from the Pacific Northwest to New Jersey and release them and see if they could find their way home. Okay, that's bad enough. I mean, my test for whether any animal experiment or plant experiment is acceptable is whether it would be acceptable to do the same equivalent on you, to the equivalent on you. And so how would you like it if you are just going to visit your parents, or you're going to the grocery store, and suddenly somebody takes you 3,000 miles away. Let's see if they can find their way home. That's called kidnapping. And it gets worse, because the birds were able to find their way home. And so then they started wondering, maybe that's because they were able to sort of count and pay attention to the turns they made. And, you know, as soon as I hear about somebody being put in a dark space and then counting turns, I think about being kidnapped by the mafia and being put in the trunk, and that's what they do, or kidnapped by some sexual sadist. And so what they would do is they would put them into rotating drums. And so the birds are in the dark in rotating drums being driven 3,000 miles. It was like, what sort of insanity is that? But it gets worse, because they would then they wanted to know whether the birds could do it through sense of smell, through detecting magnetic fields. And so what they would do is they would kidnap birds, move them 1,000 miles out of where they're supposed to be, and then they would cut the nerve between their brain and their nose, and half of them, and the other half they wouldn't. And the half that they didn't were able to find their way home, and the other half were not able to find their way home. Or because of the magnetic stuff, it ends up that pigeons, homing pigeons and other pigeons, have high concentrations of iron in their beak. And so they were curious, the scientists were curious as to whether the pigeons were using those to detect magnetic fields. And so, of course, what they did is cut the nerve that is able to detect what's going on in that part of the beak. And there was no mention in the book that this is sadistic. I mean, there's a sense in which this book could almost have been called The Sadism of Science, because this is just page after page of these. I mean, I don't mind experiments. I mean, yes, they're captive rats, so that's terrible right there. But I don't mind an experiment where you figure out if a rat likes the taste better of chocolate or cherry. You know, it's like, I would not mind if somebody came up to me and said, here, do you want this? Do you like chocolate better, or do you like Rainier cherries better? That's a nice experiment. But I wouldn't like it if they cut my olfactory nerve. And there was one experiment in the book that was one of the most horrible. Whenever I mention vivisection in any of my books, I always say, what sort of fiend could think of this? And that's what I thought when I read about this one experiment in the book where they think that birdsong produces endorphins and opioids in the brains of the birds when they're singing. And I know for sure that they produce endorphins when I hear them because they make me happy, but leave that aside. So what they did is they took singing birds and non-singing birds and they put their feet in scalding water. And the birds who were singing could stand the pain a little bit longer, which suggested to them that it was producing opioids in the brain. What sort of monster would think of putting songbirds, what sort of monster would think of putting, dunking songbird feet into hot water? Who would think of that? That is like the platonic ideal of sadism. I mean, a songbird. And so there's experiments, and there was, as I said, no acknowledgement of that all through the book that they would, but they were doing these horrible things to these wonderful little creatures. And I fully recognize that, you know, songbirds are killed and eaten, but there's a big difference between killing by a falcon or by anybody to satisfy one's hunger and killing to satisfy one's curiosity. And if you don't know the difference between those, then I'm really sorry. So I'm very grateful to this and any book that acknowledges the splendor and intelligence that exists throughout the non-human world. So for that, I am extremely grateful that it pushed discourse that far. And what I would eventually like soon, because it's killing the world actually, would be to see books that have been able to, insofar as possible, root out the unquestioned human supremacist assumptions that pervade this culture and that are driving the entire world to extinction.